Okay, this is the December 6th meeting of the Pacifica National Board Governance Committee. I'm George Ryder. I will call the roll. Grace Aaron?
Here.
Ken Aaron?
Here.
Lona Elias? Lona? Jim Brown? William Campisi? Don Cook?
Here.
Leslie Fox? William Heerwagen? Tony Norman?
Present.
Venetia Patel Adams? Myself? Serene Roberts? Muskie Law Myrtle Washington?
Speaking.
I think we need Lona Elias. Is she still here?
She was a few minutes ago.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, that's seven. That's what we need for quorum. Thank you all for being here. Let me bring up the agenda. I'll read it out loud, and we'll go from there. Okay, the agenda is the same agenda we had last month when we I postponed the meeting and we didn't get quorum for it. So it's roll call, which we did, minutes, which we don't have, process for improving committee organization after elections, which is Serene, attendance at LSB meetings electronically, which has been superseded by an action of the PMB already. And the last one I put on, can an executive session actions be held secret from members of the LSB who do not attend? That's somewhat moot since the item has already been sort of handled, but I guess it's worth discussing. Does anybody have any additions?
Box being added. I'm on the committee.
Yeah. Does anybody have any additions to the agenda?
No.
Nothing? Okay, well, then I don't know what Serene had in mind, but the first item is the process for improving committee organization after elections.
This is Ken Aaron, point of order.
Yeah?
Isn't there any, first of all, before you go ahead, you have to get the agenda approved. You ask the presenter.
I'm sorry.
I asked
if there were any additions, and no one said anything, so I assumed it was all right. Yes.
What about minutes?
We don't have any minutes either.
Okay.
We don't have a secretary either.
Okay.
So are there any is there any objections to the agenda? Again, any additions?
I think that we should postpone Serene's item until she's on the call to motivate it. We have no idea what she has in mind. So I suggest...
That's true. I did leave a message for her, but there's no guarantee she's going to get it anytime soon. Grace is suggesting we postpone that consideration. Of the improving committee organization after the elections. Is there any objection to doing that? Okay. Well, hearing none then. The next item was attendance at LSB meetings electronically. Let me just say what the question was. My understanding is that the PNB has resolved it, but I think it would be useful for some of you who are on the PNB to say just exactly what happened. So the question, could you participate by Skype, let's say, which was at an LSB meeting? And KPSA had a practice of doing that, had some rules for it. KPFT had said, no, can't do that. And so we were hoping to get some sort of network-wide ruling on it, basically. Am I correct? Did the PNB rule on this? And if so, what is the ruling? And anybody who can speak to it, please feel free to speak up.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is Tony. We did get a letter from our council, FCC council, that said it would be in the best interest of the foundation, that he felt that that might be against CPB requirements for LSBs on the local level to have telephone conferences of that nature. So it was based on that recommendation that the majority of the PNB felt that, at least that was one of the major reasons, not to go forward with the policy of doing the telephone conferences.
Was there any kind of explanation of why that was agreed upon?
There was a letter submitted from the FCC council.
I understand, but what was his reason for saying that he didn't think that was a good idea?
Because he felt it might be inconsistent with the CPB requirements of open meetings.
Well, there must have been something more specific than that.
I mean, who is that speaking as, Grace?
Leslie Fox.
Oh, well, it was a letter. He submitted a letter to the PNB.
Mm-hmm.
Giving his explanation. So,
nice
the chair.
Touch.
Is there a cue?
Yeah. Go ahead. We'll take one. Go ahead, Ken.
But point of information: who was the attorney, and where did the letter come from? I don't understand. The attorney may have an opinion about where the best place to have lunch is. It doesn't make it a legal requirement. So I didn't understand the legal vetting that said you can't have an electronic meeting. You have to be in person for an LSB meeting.
Well, it was John Quigler, and he gave his opinion that he felt it might, doing that might be inconsistent with the intent of the CPB requirements of the meeting.
Lona Elias to the stack, please.
Yeah, go ahead, Lona.
Okay, so his viewpoint.
Excuse me.
What a point of information.
Excuse me, my name is Lona, and just said Lona Elias. Go ahead.
And you got an answer. Lona, go ahead, and Ken will put you back on the stack if you would like.
All right, thank you.
I just wanted some clarification, please.
Yeah.
Tony said that you spoke to our FCC attorney, and our FCC attorney said that he believed it was inconsistent with the CPB. Is it because he reached out to them to pose the question to him and got an answer back from them saying that it would violate their regulations? I just needed some clarity.
No, it was his. He is very experienced in FCC regulations as well as CPP requirements, and he just gave his opinion as to why he felt it might be against, if not the letter, the intent of the CPP requirement. That was just his opinion. And of course,
If I may explore further, when you say might, that leaves some ambiguity. And so for me and probably other people also, it doesn't sound final. I mean, is that the way it was worded, that it might be?
Well, if I can respond, as an attorney, each attorney will give his assessment opinion on the what he might think would be legal or not legal against the intent of the law. Each attorney may have different opinions on different attorneys, but he is our FCC attorney, and the PNB gave great weight to his opinion, and that's why the majority of PNB members decided, at least for the moment, that that's why they voted the way they voted.
Ken?
Hey, thank you.
Ken, did you want to speak further?
Oh, no, I just, as a point of information, that's all.
Oh, okay.
Grace. This is
Grace? Good.
Yeah, I have the letter from John in front of me. Would you all like me to read it to you?
Yeah, I'd like
to. Would anyone like it to be read?
Yes, I would. Ken. Yes.
Okay.
Mona, Elias, I would.
And Tony, this is proper to read this. It has to be proper. Just as a little bit of a preamble, John Kriegler has been on retainer with Pacifica for many, many, many years, and he's a preeminent FCC and CPB lawyer. His opinion holds a lot of weight. Anyway, on November 3rd, Lydia sent him a note saying, John, thanks. I know back in the day here at KPFK when I was lab chair, we were fortunate to have a statistician whose expertise we utilized to convert our community needs assessment data into a report. I agree our CABs tend to veer away from that task. Anyway, I don't know what that's all about. Anyway, however, since the new bylaws when we formed local station boards in addition to our community advisory boards, we've had to keep track of both. My question was re-local station boards, but I suspect the same need for in-person meetings would apply unless you think otherwise. Thanks again. Okay, so this is John's response. Before I get to your question, I should make sure that you know that CPB has been cracking down on noncompliance and beefing up its annual certification requirements. Here's a link to the new certification form. After I finish reading this, I will email all of you this email. Part of the certification requires the grantee to explain how the CAB communicates its advice. It strongly implies that written reports are advisable. CPB has always been mercifully vague about many CAB requirements. It has left to the grantee's discretion whether CAB members are elected or appointed and whether the CAB is given any autonomous legal identity or whether it simply serves as an advisory committee. It's a good idea to keep CABs focused on the tasks which they are assigned and keep them out of station operations. They have a tendency to get interested in personnel matters and to voice opinions on individual programs and programmers. I favor in-person meetings for two reasons. First, as a legal matter, CAB meetings have to be open, in quotes. Perhaps you can set up conference bridges or provide some other means of providing for public attendance of phone meetings, but it adds a complication and expense to the process. The other reason for having in-person meetings is to make sure that the CAB members are on task and committed. You don't want to encourage CAB members to multitask on other interests during meetings, which they do not attend in person. If you permit attendance by phone, I'd limit it to individuals with exigent circumstances and still require an in-person quorum for meetings. One other point. Unlike the PNB, which is inherently a national organization, CABs and LSB serve a local purpose. The fact that you allow phone or internet attendance for PNB meetings does not necessarily mean that remote attendance is a good idea for LSBs and CABs. The labs are created by Pacifica's bylaws, or the LSBs it should be, are created by Pacifica's bylaws rather than CPB requirements, but because they function as committees of the PNB, they are subject to open meeting rules, so my answer would be the same as for CABs. Is that clear?
Well, I have a question, actually, and I'm sorry I was a little distracted, so it may be clear, but not clear to me. There's a distinction between having a telephonic meeting altogether and having an in-person meeting where some number of people are actually there electronically. My understanding was the ruling of the PNB was that the latter couldn't happen. That is to say, not only that you couldn't have some people there at an in-person meeting who were not in person, who were actually there electronically. Is that correct? Was that really the decision of the PNB? And was that the same thing that Kriegler was talking about? I mean, it sounded as though the CPB was saying LSBs couldn't meet electronically the way the PNB meets. So I would just like Tony or Grace or whoever is clear about that to just let me know what the situation is.
Well, the actual language, I guess you'll have to, I thought our secretary sent it out to all the LSBs what specific language of the motion that the PNB voted on. But the impression I got that I thought the PNB interpreted from what Krigler was saying in his response was that it should be discouraged, even having the telephone, not just the telephone conference, but PNB LSB members at least doing telephone meetings when they should show up in person, unless there was some extenuating circumstance.
Mona Elias, and the, exactly.
So that was the interpretation that I understood it. But like then, we'd have to pull the exact wording of the motion that was approved to see what it says. And I thought our secretary sent it out to all the chairs of the LSB and all of that. But I'll have to reach.
She did, and I did see that. Lona, go ahead.
Hi, thank you. Two things. One, from hearing the letter myself, were I there at the meeting, I don't know that I would have come to the conclusion that the PNB did. That's number one. Because it seems to me that there is absolutely room with the idea that, and then I'm going to move on, with the idea that as long as there's a quorum in person at the meeting and that it was not absolutely illegal or even ill-advised, that there were some people who could only be there because of circumstances by Skype, that was possible and permitted and all right. That's how I would have come down on the issue. The other thing is that whereas the CAB is absolutely something that is required by CPD, the LSB is not. And so I think I'm probably losing my thought because that doesn't sound like what I really wanted to say. I apologize, guys. It doesn't seem that it would, if it seems that there's more room for interpretation. So my question is this. I understand that the PNB has voted on this, and I'm just wondering, is it proper? Is there any way in which the issue, if different LSBs did not necessarily agree with this, that it could be put for a vote from the different LSBs to get to poll their opinion of it? And maybe that, anyway, I don't know if that will be appropriate. Thank you.
This is Grace. Can I?
Yeah, go ahead, Grace.
Okay. I have the motion. Our LSB secretary sent it out, and it is, since local station board meetings, including delegate assemblies, are subject to open meeting rules, resolve that until, quote, exigent circumstances, unquote, for certain individuals is spelled out by the PNB, Pacifica's policy regarding local station boards allowing LSC members to participate in LSC meetings via remote access is that this is prohibited. All LSC meetings are to be conducted as in-person meetings. With the following amendment, the PNB secretary shall immediately notify the LSC chairs and LSC secretaries of this new policy. So this was sent by Janet Cobrin, the PNB secretary. Secretaries of all the LSBs and our secretary at KPFK sent it out to the entire LSB.
So it seems clear that the ruling of the PNB is clear. The point that Lona was raising is not so clear whether that was really required by even if you take Krigler's recommendation as that's what we ought to do, it isn't. I think Lona was saying it isn't clear that that was what that stringent a restriction on being able to any one person being on electronically. That wasn't absolutely necessary given what he was recommending. Do we want to pursue that further? Do we want to pursue that any further?
Lorna Elias to the stack, please?
Yes, Lorna.
All right, just to clarify, in listening to the reading by, I'm sorry, who was that reading, please?
It was Grace.
Grace. In listening to the reading, it seems to me that the concern that I had was indeed included in that motion, because it said, except for, you know, extenuating circumstances, if someone had a situation where it was just that it was okay under those circumstances. That's what I heard, which would answer the concern that I had about the motion. So it seems to me that if there is some extenuating circumstances where someone has to, and as long as there is a quorum, that it's not totally prohibited, that it's also allowed under those circumstances.
I didn't hear that, but...
could she read that sentence again, except in... I can't say the word. I'm so tired.
Exigent. Yes, I can read that. George, is that
thank
okay?
You.
Yes, please do.
Since the local station board meetings including delegates' assemblies, are subject to open meeting rules, resolve that until exigent circumstances for certain individuals is spelled out by the PNB, Pacifica's policy regarding local station boards allowing LSB members to participate in LSB meetings via remote access is that it is prohibited.
Got it.
LSB meetings. So until the PNB finds exigent circumstances, there shall be, this is saying there won't be any remote access or participation on LSB at LSB meetings.
Okay. Do we want to discuss this any further? Anybody else want to speak on this? Okay. The last item is, can an executive session actions be held secret from members of the LSB who did not attend? So this actually happened at KPFT. Full disclosure, I was one of the people who didn't attend. And the people who did, who were there, again, I wasn't there. So this is somewhat, so I wasn't privy to what the actual decision was, but others who weren't there were complaining that they couldn't find out what happened. That the substance of what had actually happened was being held as confidential from other members of the LSB. My own sense of that is that that's totally improper, that everybody on the LSB has a fiduciary duty, and in this case, everyone has signed a confidentiality statement. And so the idea that you can keep an action confidential from your own board just seems totally off the wall to me, but I would like to hear what you all think about it.
This is Ken.
Ken, go ahead.
Whatever the considerations are, I think the proper thing to do is research it in Robert's Rules of Order and other nonprofit organizations, and rather than getting into a big, long debate about it, because there's going to be arguments on either side. If the closed session doesn't require the maintenance of minutes, which would allow the next time you attended a meeting, you could read the minutes to find out what motions were passed or not passed. That's the only thing you'd have privy to information, is what would be in the minutes, what motion was placed and passed and so forth. So if in practice the decision is not to distribute the minutes because they're confidential, but allow somehow people to see them. This was an LSB meeting, not a director's meeting.
That's right.
I'm just saying that the proper guidance should be acquired through Robert's Rules of Order and some parliamentarian, rather than taking a look at political considerations. Thank you.
The minutes in this case came out about a month later.
Then you were notified. you're not privy to whatever discussion was there besides what's in the minutes. The minutes is the minutes.
Not true.
Any relevant activity.
Privy to what the actions taken were, except insofar as when the minutes came out, then they were there. But my sense was that. Well, maybe that's not correct. I haven't really looked at Robert's rules about that, but it just seemed to me that simply asking what happened, we should have been shown the actions that were taken. These were the motions that occurred.
Pardon me,
you're referring to the minutes. You did get the minutes.
We got the minutes a month later. The controversy came the next day when we wanted to find out what had happened. Lona?
Yes. I agree with the person who was just speaking. I'm sorry, didn't retain your name. In as much as that the minutes would be the official record of what transpired, what I'm hearing is basically it was like there was a gag rule or those that were privy to what took place act as though they were under a gag rule where they could not discuss it with the LSB and without the, to me, it's counterintuitive, and that's a nice way of saying it. It's counterintuitive that any business of the LSB would not be the business of all members of the LSB. To me, that's just absolutely absurd and sounds political, and I strongly suggest that rather than continuing to debate this, that we pull the rules out since, I don't know, it just sounds political, and that's a point of personal privilege. Thank you.
Does anybody else want to speak to this?
Yeah, this is Tony.
Tony?
Yeah, my sense is all LSB members are privileged to any information, even in clothes. So I don't know why they wouldn't tell. I don't see any prohibition of letting the individuals who weren't there to know what the decisions that the LSB actually took, as long as it was an LSB member. So my position is that as a matter of policy for LSBs and PNP, that all LSB members are privileged to that information. I don't really necessarily think it's a Robert Rules of Order question. The only time we go to Robert Rules of Order, if we're not, if we don't have any policy or guidelines from our practice as a LSB and PNB doesn't speak to it. But I would think clearly based on our practices of the PNB and LSB that the members are privileged to that information. That's just that simple.
Anybody else want to speak to this?
Great.
Grace, go ahead.
I'd just like to say that I strongly agree with the last two speakers.
Okay. Anybody else want to speak to this? Well, I hear that there is likely a majority, at least on the committee, who agree with the last two speakers and myself, actually, that... you can't really keep things secret from members of your own board, whether it happened in executive session or not. And the question in my mind is, do we want to make any recommendation about this to the PNB to forestall it happening in the future? So I can't say that I've got anything... written down, but I could probably within a minute or so come up with something. What is the sense? Would people just weigh in on whether or not they would like to move forward on this and to actually make some sort of a ruling to send to the PNB about it? Tony, you're the chair of the PNB. Let me ask you first.
If the committee wants to send a request that the PNB speak on that, they can. And to clarify that issue with the PNB, ask for clarification from the PNB. That's the way I guess they would ask for clarification on that policy. So if the committee chooses to do that, I don't see any problem with that.
Lona Elias to the staff, please.
Go ahead, Lona.
I don't know that the I don't know that we as a committee need to okay, let me just be more affirmative. I think that if we choose to do anything in committee, it should be a request that a letter of clarification is sent to the different stations that this is an issue that came up, and that so that it does not come up in other instances, it's information that we need to share with you. I don't know if the proper procedure to that, but if you feel that it needs to come out of this committee, then that would be what seems to be most appropriate. I don't feel that we need to ask them to do anything other than to communicate this matter, because there seems to be some kind of confusion in terms of the proper procedure.
Okay. So I'm thinking that perhaps I could draft such a letter to the PNB, circulate it to you all on email, if you would respond within a day or so, essentially saying that actions taken in an executive session cannot be held confidential from other members of the LSB and must be divulged upon request. It seems to be the sense of the committee. Is there any objection to my doing that? Okay.
Yeah, this is Ken.
Yeah, again.
Okay, the issue is specific to me. You have to take a look at the idea of somebody not wanting to do that. If there was a closed session and there was discussion and motions were made, motions were approved, and somebody who wasn't there says, well, what happened? And they call up their friend and they say, well, tell me. I don't want to wait for the minutes. Then you've got the telephone game going on. It says, well, the way I remember the motion, it was this. And Jack got very angry, and Alice objected, and Susan agreed. And then, you know, I think they're doing it for this. And you just got chit-chat going on over the phone lines about what happened in a closed session, which is confidential. Might deal with personnel matters, legal matters, or financial matters. So it's without setting up a protocol about how do people who weren't at the meeting find out about what occurred in the meeting. I think it's most appropriate that they do it by distributing the minutes. Again, it would have to be minutes that are approved. I understand the consequences, like the person who was not attending the meeting is concerned. He wants to know what happened. But to having it be loose, it opens the opportunity for a lack of confidentiality in what occurred at the meeting, to have it informal, that they have a right to know what went on. How are they going to find out what went on? Most of these closed session meetings aren't recorded audibly, and the only proper legal way to notify you what went on are the minutes, and really the approved minutes. That's my concern, is that it's going to damage, it's going to open up holes to compromise the confidentiality of the closed sessions.
Here you can. Let me respond as a procedural matter. One could call the chair or the secretary and ask for the text of what was passed. That will exist even if the minutes haven't been published, since generally speaking, we do actually put it in writing before we vote on it. So.
Just let me intercede. That's good. That's a reasonable procedure. So okay. I'm just saying, in your polling people to find out what their considerations are, you should say that there should be a standardized procedure for somebody to find out, rather than say, I have a right to know. And that can you could say they have a right to know, and that can be accomplished by a direct phone call to the secretary or chair.
I'd be glad to do that. I think that makes sense. Any other comment on this?
Yeah. No, no, I'll go after, since I've spoken on it before. I'll wait till everybody else that hasn't spoken, please.
Is there anybody else who hasn't spoken who would like to?
This is Grace. Have I spoken on this? I don't think so. Anyway.
I don't think so. Go ahead.
All right. I just think that if you state it as a negative, in other words, the LSD is not allowed to withhold information from a closed session from LSD members who did not attend. In other words, if it's a policy, if they're trying to set a policy that if you don't attend a closed session, you can't know what occurred in that session, that would be improper. An individual LSD member could decline to paraphrase what happened in the closed session. I'm just saying, if you want to put it in the, I don't know. Do you understand what I'm trying to say?
Not exactly.
It's not in the authority of the LSD to refuse information about closed sessions to LSD members who did not attend those sessions.
How about if I say that they are entitled to the information and can get it by a call to either the secretary or to the chair?
Or an email. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. Okay. Any other comments about it? Okay, well, that's all we have.
No, I was waiting for everyone else to speak.
I'm sorry, Lona, you were on the spot. Go ahead.
I just paused in case there was
Since
I've spoken to. So, two things, maybe three. Briefly, though, a simple statement that affirms what we've already practiced. And what we've already practiced, that in executive sessions, the information is available to any member of the LSD. And to legislate behavior because someone may have a political response to something that took place in an LSD meeting or, you know, in an executive session is absolutely positively inappropriate. And an exercise in futility, because you cannot anticipate, and that's not our business, okay? Our business is to be clear about, in terms of governance, what rights we have. And so if it's stated in such a way that this issue came up where members of an LSD were not permitted or to have the information of what occurred in the meeting because they were not present. It is the policy and the practice and has been that the information is available to all members of the local station board and allow, and period, simple, that makes it broad and inclusive at the same time. That's my opinion.
You don't want to put in...
No, anything, nothing. We just want to make the statement of what our rights are and not attempt to legislate anybody's behavior. If a member chooses not to try to paraphrase what happened in the meeting, then they're under no obligation to do so. However, if they choose to discuss it with another member, it is absolutely their prerogative and their right to do so. So I don't want us to get into legislating that type of behavior based on something that we think may and could possibly occur. That's not our business. And that's not our duty or responsibility, in my opinion.
I don't think that Ken was trying to prevent the informal transfer of information so much as providing one path where you could have some certainty that you could get it.
This is Ken in response to that.
Yeah.
We just went through the thing of Grace reading the motion that was approved by the PNB on a telephone call, and it had to be clarified and go back and forth. We just went through the practice of reading the letter or part of the letter from John Kriegler, and that's like maybe out of context and this and that. And again, it's like the telephone game where you whisper... person A whispers to person B, and he further it down the line, and distortion gets in. So that's why I'm recommending that you prescribe a method so that it doesn't become just a chit-chat thing over the phone, because things, there are restrictions on closed sessions. Grace and I are both active in board activities, but we don't discuss things that occur in closed sessions that we are not, one of the others not participant to, because you're not supposed to. It's a closed session matter. And so there should be some respect for the confidentiality of the closed session and maintaining that. And it is better, I think it's fine for the secretary to read you the motion over the phone, and you can write it down or something. I don't know. I guess you could maybe trust it to email, maybe not. But it shouldn't, and I'm not arguing the fact that you can't restrict people's right to communication, so board members can communicate with each other any way they want. That's fine. But they shouldn't be, I don't agree with that they should, well, they can discuss it. But in addition to that, there should be a way for the non-attending member to get a precise context of what occurred, rather than just, oh, I think they fired her, or oh, I think they hired him, or oh, I think they're going to change the name of the station. Rather, it's better that you are able to call up and say, Madam Secretary, I didn't attend the meeting. Could you please read me the motion that got approved? So I think it's a more of an assertion about the non-attending member's rights to get the precise statement of what occurred, rather than rely on word of mouth.
Please. Lona Elias, I have the perfect compromise with both.
Okay.
Both. It's a statement of both. Everything that I said, that everything that happened, blah, 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 is available to all members. You know, this had occurred, blah, 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 blah. Because of that, let's be clear that all members of the LSB are engaged and have a right to all business of the LSB, including that that occurred in executive session. And to ensure that this information is disseminated accurately, the secretary of the LSB shall disseminate to the members of the LSB minutes or notes of actions taken in executive session. Both are appropriate. That's my opinion.
Well, in this case,
I'm a politician. They're not exclusive of each other. We can do both. And clearly, I think that's a good idea. I'm saying, Ken, I think it's a good idea to have it specific and, however, very, very tightly constructed in terms of specific direction. That is going to be the secretary or the chair that will share it. However, at the same time, making a clear statement that it is absolutely inappropriate and illegal to seek to withhold any actions taken by the LSB in executive session from any member of the LSB, whether they were in attendance or not.
I think we have agreement here, and it's just a question of wording. Well, that's it. Yeah, right. But I think it's clear that we agree that the people who weren't there have a right to the information, and that there ought to be a specific path that they can get the information through the secretary and the chair, in either in written form or a clear statement of what was passed. Is there any objection? Is there any disagreement with that? That we actually are in agreement about that? Okay, so I'll give a shot at writing it up. I'll do it probably later on this evening, and I'll send it out tomorrow morning. Please get back as soon as you can with whatever, you know, either a yay or nay or a suggestion for change, and we'll forward it to the PNB as soon as it gets approved by you all. Is there any objection to that? Okay, hearing none, there's nothing else on the agenda.
Oh, well, I have one last thing.
Okay.
Happy holidays.
Okay.
Before 10:30, this is fabulous.
Yes. Yes. Okay, we are adjourned. Good night, all.
Good night.
As Ken says, have a good holiday.
Good night.
Happy holidays. Bye.